سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ألف لام ميم، أحسب الناس أن يتركوا أن يقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون. صلوات على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأجل فرجهم.
My friends, the subject we are discussing is fitna, the trials that Allah puts believers through and the reasons why He does it. And we have come down to the last and final reason that I explained yesterday, and that is that Allah is giving trials to believers in these days and ages that we are living in, so that He can prepare us for the task that He has given believers of preparing the grounds for the reappearance of the last Imam. Once we know the task, and the task is not an easy task. It is something that Allah has always given to the Anbiya, the Prophets, and the Messengers. And hence, giving this task in the hands of normal believers like you and me has made it such that Allah now needs to test us and try us in ways that He has never tried believers before. And that's the reason that you see that when we read the hadith of Akhir al-Zaman and the last days before the reappearance of the Imam, we see that the trials are going to become so hard that we were asked to remember these trials. Even we were asked to complain of these trials. We see that the Imam of the time has taught us to read Dua-i Iftitah. This Dua we read in the month of Ramadan. And in this Dua, you see at the end of this Dua, Imam in this dua is telling us to make some complaints to Allah. And he says that you should, there are issues that you need to complain in order that you can raise that awareness in your heart and realize the importance of what you're missing. So he says that, O Allah, I complain to you about the fact that our Prophet is not with us. I complain to you about the fact that your appointed wali is not amongst us. I complain to you about the excessive numbers of our enemies. And I complain to you about the small numbers of believers. And then after he makes these complaints and he says at the end that I complain to you بِشِدَّةِ فِتْنٍ بِنَا, that the intensity of the fitna that we are facing. Here we see that the Imam is alluding to the fact that in Akhir al-Zaman the fitna and the trials are going to be so intense that we will have to complain to Allah of how hard these trials are becoming. And you see that the way these trials that are going right now in Akhir al-Zaman and in our times, we see how hard these trials are becoming. That one hadith where the Imam has mentioned that the trials are going to be such in Akhir al-Zaman, the trials are going to be such that it would be easier for a mu'min to walk on fire. It would be easier for a mu'min to walk on fire the whole day, but it will be harder for him to go from morning till evening and protect his religion. It will become so hard. You will see that it will be easier for you to walk on fire. That would be easier. But to safeguard your deen, to protect yourself from haram, will become so hard that you will not go in a day's time, but that you are going to witness some haram, hear some haram, or see some haram, or say some haram. Times are going to become so hard. So now with this intensity of fitna, the reason Allah is giving this is because He wants the mu'mineen and the believers to get ready for the task that is ahead of them. Allah has given us this. If you are a mu'min in these days, then you have a task ahead of you. And this is the reason that if someone realizes this, then he would understand why we are told to call the Imam all the time. In every occasion, in every event, every day after prayer, we are told to call the Imam. Ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu. Allah, hasten his reappearance. We call on to you, hasten his reappearance, right? And we're calling him all the time. But we need to see, is the Imam going to answer us? Does the Imam answer the invitation of believers? Did any masoom answer the invitation of believers? This is what we want to see right now, my friends. And from here, I want you to be with me and inshallah, pay attention as we learn something that what is needed to be done in order for us to be with the Imam or for him to come back to us or even answer our call. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. In the history of Islam, there have been two times when mu'mineen invited the masoom to come. We have two examples of mu'mineen, believers, inviting the masoom and the infallible to come to them. They send an invitation, they call them. Two times we see. And we need to study this history to know our own obligations. The first time that believers called a masoom was when the people of Medina, at that time known as Yathrib, called the Prophet. This is the first time that we see that mu'mineen sent an invitation and said that we are inviting you to come. The Prophet was in Makkah, and these people belonged to Medina. They called the Prophet. They called the Prophet. Now, when we want to see if the Prophet accepted or not, you see that these are mu'mineen who accepted Islam, who believed in his message, who believed him to be a messenger. They called him. When they called him, you see that the Prophet did not accept their invitation. Prophet did not accept their invitation. They said, you know, Ya Rasulullah, we know that your homeland is Makkah, that your ancestors belong to Makkah, but your life is in danger there. People of Makkah have turned against you. We want to invite you here so that we can protect you and that we can defend you. The Prophet replied to them and said, mere words are not going to invite me there. Your words are not going to make me come there. My friends, understand the answer of the Prophet. He said, your words are not going to make me come there. He said, I need to see a change. I need to see a change in your lifestyle, in your life, in your ways. When the Prophet replied back to them, so the people of Medina had a smart answer. You know, they had a smart answer. They said, well, you know, that's the reason we're inviting you to come. You come and change us. If you come over here, you can change us. Right? That's what we're inviting you here for. So Rasulullah accepted the answer and said, all right, if that is what you want, then I'm sending my representative. I'm sending my naib over to you. And the Prophet sent a companion by the name of Mus'ab ibn Umair. Now, does anyone know who Mus'ab ibn Umair is? Anyone has any idea of Mus'ab ibn Umair? He's the one who taught the people of Medina Islam, educated them, trained them, so that they can be ready for the Prophet. Well, let me give an introduction to Mus'ab ibn Umair, if you haven't heard of him so far. Right, send me a salawat. Question, how many of you have been to Hajj or Umrah? Okay, so alhamdulillah, we have many people here who have been there. Good. Alright, those who haven't been there, inshallah, we will make dua that Allah invites you to come there. My friends, those who have been to Hajj or Umrah, obviously have been to Medina also. Right? You have been to Medina. When you have been to Medina, you went to the Ziyarat of Medina. I'm sure you went to the Ziyarat of Medina. And one of the Ziyarat of Medina is the battlefield of Uhud. Is the battlefield of Uhud. In the battlefield of Uhud, they are the graves of the Shuhada of Uhud. And when we go to the graves of the Shuhada of Uhud, we read the Ziyarat of which martyr? Hazrat Hamza, the uncle of the Prophet. And those who have gone there have made ziyarat of his grave. Right? You made ziyarat of his grave and you have sent salam to him. And the question that I get every time, and anyone who goes there will see, is that whenever they're shown the grave of Hamza, there is another grave at his feet. The grave at the feet is the grave of Mus'ab ibn Umair. Grave at the feet of Hazrat Hamza is the grave of Mus'ab ibn Umair, the representative of the Prophet to Medina. He is the one who had gone there to teach Islam to the people. He was, in looks, he looked very much like the Prophet. In fact, people used to confuse him with the Prophet. He looked like him. And he was sent to Medina to teach the people. When he taught the people and educated them and trained them, and when they changed their lives and they began practicing Islam, when they changed their attitude, when they became practicing the codes of Islam, then Mus'ab ibn Umair wrote a letter back to the Prophet saying, now the people are ready for you. And based on his letter and based on his recommendation, the Prophet began the process of Hijrat and migration to Medina. So this is the first example we see, where Mu'mineen invited a Masoom to come. The Masoom rejected the invitation and said, first, you have to change your ways. And he sent his Naib and his representative to help the people and educate them. And when the Naib said, yes, they are ready, then he accepted the word of the Naib. You see, the first thing happened. Now the second example of people who invited a Masoom to come to them, Mu'mineen, I'm saying, believers. The second example we have is the people of Kufa who invited Imam Hussein. And they also said the same thing. And they said that, listen, Imam, you're in Medina, that's your home, your grandfather is there, and we understand that, but your life is in danger. Your life is in danger, and we are here, we are inviting you, and we will be with you, and we will defend your life. We will defend your life and we will be there with you. Now did Imam Hussein accept his invitation? I mean, 16,000 letters came. 16,000 letters, in those days it was a big deal. 16,000 letters, you know, from the people of Kufa, it came there. So, did Imam Hussein accept it and said, oh, you know what, they're inviting us, let's go. Let's go there. Did he say that? No. See, the sunnah of the Prophet is what Imam Hussein is going to practice also. He said, your words are not going to bring me there. Your invitation, your mere invitation is not going to bring me there. He said, first I will send you my representative, my Naib. And he sent Muslim ibn Aqil to go to Kufa. He said, go there and find out if what they're saying is right or wrong. Understand this. He sent Muslim ibn Aqil there to find this out. Why? My friends, understand this. Claiming to be a mu'min is not enough. That's what Allah is saying in this ayat. أَحَسِبَ النَّاسُ أَن يُتْرَكُوا أَن يَقُولُوا آمَنَّا وَهُمْ لَا يُفْتَنُونَ. Do you think you can say, I believe, and you can get away with it? So no, you will be tried. Why are you being tried? To know who is truthful and who is not truthful. Who is real and who is fake. So when the people invited Imam Hussein to come, Imam Hussein said, listen, your invitation is just a claim. First, I will send you my Naib. I will send you my representative. And let's see how you deal with him. So Muslim ibn Aqil went there. He went there. When they came to him and gave allegiance to him, and they pledged allegiance and said, we are with you all the way. And he saw all these people with him. He said, alright, the people have made allegiance. And so he wrote the letter to Imam Hussein. The Imam, the people have made allegiance to you. You can come here now. See again, Imam Hussein did not listen to the people. He listened to his representative. When his representative invited him, then Imam Hussein went forward. He said, now is the time to go. You see, and he went forward. Now it's another thing that the people of Medina were true to the promise they made to the Prophet. And the people of Kufa were not true to the promise they made with Imam Hussein. That's a whole different subject altogether. But neither did the Prophet listen to the people of Medina, nor did Imam Hussein listen to the people of Kufa. The Prophet listened to his representative. Imam Hussein also listened to his representative. Understand this. From here we understand the sunnah of the Prophet and the Imams. Anytime when mu'mineen will invite the Imam to come back, or anytime mu'mineen are going to ask for the Imam to come, if it's the Prophet or the Imam, it doesn't matter. Neither is the Prophet going to listen to you. Neither is the Imam going to listen to you. So what are they going to do? The sunnah of the Prophet and the Imam is the sunnah that Imam-e-Zamana will have. When we are inviting Imam-e-Zamana to come, he is saying, your words are not going to bring me there. Your invitation is not going to bring me back. The people of Medina, when they invited the Prophet, they were tested by his representative. How you deal with him is what's going to make the Prophet come to you. The people of Kufa dealt with Muslim ibn Aqil. They made allegiance to him. When Muslim ibn Aqil, when he said yes, then Imam Hussein came. My friends, when we are calling the Imam, when we are calling the Imam, then the Imam is not listening to us. He's not going to answer our call. Why would he? Neither did Rasulullah, neither did Imam Hussein. They didn't listen to our call. So now, how does this work? My friends, how does this work? Let me explain that if you send me a salawat. My friends, how does this work? My friends, understand this. The people of Medina invited Rasulullah. He sent his Naib there. And when the Naib was pleased, when the people were able to deal with the Naib justly, then the Prophet came after that. Imam Hussein, when he was invited by the people of Kufa, he sent Muslim ibn Aqil there. When they made allegiance to Muslim ibn Aqil, then Imam Hussein went forward there. So from that we understood that if we are calling the Imam, Imam will not come back to us unless we deal justly with the Naib of the Imam who's living in our time. Those who are holding the flag of Islam, if we are not supporting them, why do you think the Imam will come back to us? If the people did not support Muslim ibn Aqil, you think that at that time Rasulullah would have gone to Medina? Until Muslim ibn Umar said, Rasulullah, the people are ready, then he came. Muslim ibn Aqil, when he wrote the letter, then Imam Hussein went to Kufa. He didn't listen to the people of Kufa. The same thing is with Imam Zaman. He's not going to listen to us if we don't know how to deal with the Naib Imam. If we don't know how to support the Naib Imam, then there's no way that the Imam is going to listen to us. First, we support the one who is representing the Imam. Who represents the Imam. He is the test for us. In the rabbit of the Imam, our test is to see how much do we support the representative that the Imams have left for us. How much do we support them? How much do we back them? And Imam is saying, if you don't back them, you think that I'm going to come? When did my grandfathers ever do that? When did my grandfathers ever do that? You can leave our Naib and you can come to us directly? When did that happen? Never. It is not the sunnah of the Prophet, nor is it the sunnah of the Imams. So whose sunnah are we believing in? My friends, if we want the Imam to come back, and if we want the support of the Imam, if we want the Imam to be amongst us, then we have to make sure that as we are inviting the Imam, he will send his representative time and time again to see, are we going to support him? Are we going to support him? Now, who is this Naib Imam? Who is this Naib Imam, and how do you know that? My friends, you don't have to be a philosopher to know this. You don't have to be an alim to know this. It's very simple and it's very clear. Imams have not left the religion that is, you know, so deep and sophisticated that only those who are completely wise would know what's right and wrong. They have left a very simple message that anyone can understand. Allah has made Islam easy. He hasn't made it hard. He made it easy for everyone to understand. Right? So that they at least they understand what's right and wrong. Yes, those who want to go into Haqq and truly be a part of Haqq, yes, it's difficult. It's not easy. Jihad fi sabilillah is not easy. Gaining the ma'rifat of Allah and truly standing on His side is not easy. But knowing Haqq and Batil is very easy. Allah has not left it vague or ambiguous. Who is Naib Imam? Let me explain that in a few sentences. You send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Every country sends an ambassador, right? Every country sends ambassador here and there. The job of the ambassador, the job of that representative who's going to represent the country in wherever nation he has gone to, let's say the UN, wherever. The job of the ambassador is to represent the country. In the opinion of the country. Right? What the country, whatever country he represents, his job is to represent it. Do what the country asked him to do. Now, if an ambassador comes here and starts doing his own thing, that's his own problem. Right? But if he is the ambassador of a country, he will say what the country wants him to say. He will take the stand the country wants him to take the stand. Simple as that. If you send a representative to me, for example, and say that, go as a representative, you know, to Maulana Beg, you know, and speak to him on our behalf. So your behavior, your actions, your deeds, your goals, your stands, your decisions will be based on what the community wants him to say. You say, okay, this is what you must say, this is what you must say, this is what you must do, this is what you must do. You will represent them. When we say Naibe Imam, now the one who has to represent the Imam, he is the one who is going to do what the Imam is going to do. It's simple. The one who is doing the job of the Imam the most, and the most effective way is the Naib of the Imam. Simple as that. All we need to see now is what is the job of the Imam. Send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
What is the job of the Imam? That's what we need to know. What is he going to do when he comes back? What is he going to do when he comes back? See, if the Imam is going to teach when he comes back, then it means that the Naib Imam must be the best teacher. Because the job of the Imam is to teach. If the Imam is going to educate the people when he comes back, then the job of the Naib Imam must be to be the best educator. If the job of the Imam is to read a majlis when he comes back, then the one who gives the best majlis is Naib Imam. If the job of the Imam is going to be writing books, then the best author is Naib Imam. We just need to see what is the job of the Imam when he comes back. Is he going to write books? Is he going to educate the people? Is he going to, for example, give classes? If he is going to give majlises? Or if he's going to do latmiya and matam? If he's going to do matam when he comes back, then the mess matamar, you know, is Naib Imam, right? I mean, what is the Imam going to do when he comes back? What do we have in the hadith? What did the Prophet say? What did the Imam say that the Imam is going to do when he comes back? Nowhere does it say that the Imam is going to come and teach the people. Or give majlises. Or give, for example, educate the people. Nowhere does it say that he's going to write books or be an author. What is the job of the Imam? My friends, the Prophet and the Imam, so many places have made it clear what is the job of the Imam. They defined it in two ways. Imam will have two things to do. And if you see anyone doing those two things in the best way, more than anyone else, then he is Naib Imam. He is Naib Imam. So what is he going to do? In every hadith about the Imam, from every Imam, they have made it clear that the Imam will have two things to do when he comes back. He is going to get rid of Zulm and he is going to establish Adl. My friends, those, anyone amongst us who is fighting against the Zulm more than anyone else and establishing Adl more than anyone else, he is Naib Imam in our time. Because he is doing the job of the Imam more than anyone else. He is doing the job of the Imam more than, he's fighting against Zulm and he's establishing Adl. My friends, from here, I want you to understand something. And here, from here, you will also understand who is a true mu'min and who is not. When Islam came, it came as a simple message. When Rasulullah came, he didn't bring a book of philosophy and said, listen, these are the rules of falsafa and philosophy, and go ahead, dive into it and read it. He came with a simple message, and that message is still the same message. And all of Islam can be just put into that one little sentence that the Prophet said to the people when he introduced Islam. He didn't say, you know, that, listen, these are, for example, the conditions of Salat and you should do this and do that. There's nothing. Nothing like that. He just came forward with a simple message. What did the Prophet say to invite the people? He said, "Qulu la ilaha illallah tuflihu." He says this thing. He says, say la ilaha illallah and you will be successful. In dunya and in the hereafter. You will be successful. Really, it was a simple message, right? He said, say la ilaha illallah. Tuflihu, you will be successful. Okay, la ilaha illallah. Am I successful? See what he's saying? Say la ilaha illallah, you will be successful. I mean, if we were alive in those days, you know, we who are living, you know, in this age of sales and discounts, knowing where we can get a good deal and a good bargain, you know, this really was a good bargain. Imagine this. Which religion made religion so easy? I mean, Christianity, they made it so easy for everyone. They said, believe and you will be saved. Rasulullah is saying, say and you will be saved. He's not saying believe. He's saying, say la ilaha illallah, you will be saved. I mean, this is the easiest thing you can get. No religion had made it so easy. No religion had made it so easy. Say la ilaha illallah, you will be successful. That is the best bargain, best deal you can get in any religion. So, if it was so easy, why didn't the people accept it? My friends, understand? Why didn't the people accept it? I mean, you just needed to say la ilaha illallah, and he's saying, listen, I promise you, dunya and akhirat, you're saved. So they say la ilaha illallah, and they go back to doing what they're doing. Say la ilaha illallah, if you used to drink, go say la ilaha, go back drinking. Say la ilaha, go back doing your haram things. You see, my friends, this is the case. He said say la ilaha illallah, but he wanted, everyone knew at that time, there are two things I'm saying right now. Everyone knew at that time that what he's saying, what he wants us to do, is not that simple. It requires more than that. It requires more than that. In other words, if we just look at the words, they seem like it's saying, say la ilaha illallah and we can drink. Say la ilaha illallah and we can do haram. But everyone understood through the character of the Prophet that what he means to say La ilaha illallah, it means we need to stop everything we are doing and then accept this message. My friends, why did people have a hard time with this sentence, La ilaha illallah? Why didn't they accept it? It was very easy. Why didn't they become Muslim? And even today, it's the same thing. My friends, understand it from here. You see, La ilaha illallah is the statement of our faith, is the fundamental of Islam, is the basis of our creed and our belief. And most of us who say La ilaha illallah haven't even understood the meaning of it. Haven't even understood the meaning of what La ilaha illallah means. It is just a word on our tongue like a parrot is saying it. We have never understood it. And everyone there knew what it meant. That's why they didn't accept. They knew why, what they were doing. They did not accept it. You see, my friends, La ilaha illallah is two parts. The sentence that has two parts in it. There's La ilaha and there's illallah. La ilaha means there is no God. Illallah means accept Allah. This has two parts to it. In all their situation, in all their time, they understood. No kuffar, even in Makkah, no mushrik, no kuffar had a problem with Allah. No one had a problem with Allah. They all liked Allah. The kuffar liked Allah. The mushrikeen liked Allah. In fact, they offered the Prophet, hey listen, why don't you put Allah in the Kaaba? We will also worship Him. You know, we worship Lat and Uzza and Hubul and Bul and all these things. Put Him there, we will worship Him. In fact, we will have one day for only His worship. They made an offer to the Prophet. They bring Allah there, we have nothing against Allah. Mushrikeen never had a problem with Allah. Zalimeen never had a problem with Allah. They said, come on, we will also worship. In fact, we will be with you. We will visit your masjid on the day of Eid. And we'll pray with you. We have nothing against Allah. The problem that mushrikeen, the problem that kuffar, the problem that every zalimeen had was with La ilaha. Their problem was with La ilaha. They said, why are you saying this? I mean, we are ready to accept Allah. We are ready to accept Allah, but this La ilaha, this is an offensive statement. You're hurting our gods. You're hurting what we believe in. You're hurting our way of life. You're saying, we need to first reject this. My friends, understand this. If Islam was only Allah, then no one would have a problem with Islam. No one would have a problem with Islam if Allah was the only part of our ideology. Yes, Allah, they will say, you bring Allah, we bring Ram, you bring Jesus, and everyone will say, yeah, Alhamdulillah, Islam is such a nice religion. Islam is such a nice religion, Alhamdulillah. Allah, you know, we also have Allah, Jesus, Ram, and everyone, you know, all of them. We'll put Allah like an idol and we'll worship Him. We will also worship Him with you. But Allah is saying, no, Islam is not Allah. Islam is not Allah. Islam is La ilaha illallah. First, you must reject all these gods. First, you must reject all these powers. First, you must reject everything. Then you can accept Allah. Allah cannot be accepted if you do not go through La ilaha. Allah doesn't want you if you don't say and believe in La ilaha. Allah doesn't want you. You can say that you are a Muslim all your life, but unless you practice La ilaha and reject every authority and every zalim and say that you have nothing and you are powerless, the only one with power is Allah. Understand the difference, my friends. This is the difference between those who are true believers and those who are not. Those who don't believe in La ilaha, those who don't practice La ilaha, they know what it means. Mushrikeen are against La Ilah. They said, get rid of that and we will accept you. Get rid of that, we will accept you. We also like Allah, you know. Why not Allah? But you know what? Tawheed is not Allah, my friends. Tawheed is La Ilaha Illallah. You see, this is what Tawheed is. And that's the problem that everyone had from the time Rasulullah brought that sentence and said, La, Qulu La Ilaha Illallah, Tuflihu. Say La Ilallah, you'll be successful. From that time until now, the problem that people had was with La Ilaha. This is the problem. You get rid of this, Islam will be lovable for everyone. If you get rid of La Ilaha, then you get Bani Islam. Now you understand what Bani Islam is. Right? That Islam where La Ilaha, La Ilaha is discounted and only Allah is presented. Don't say La Ilaha, people will be offended. What do you mean people? This is Allah's deen. We are mu'mineen of Allah. And if we don't say La Ilaha, La Ilaha, then we will never reach Allah. Allah doesn't want it. Allah doesn't want that belief. Allah doesn't accept that belief. My friends, first we must say La Ilaha. That has to be established. And this is why you see, my friends, this is why you see, when the Imam will come back, what is he going to do? He is just going to establish that sentence the Prophet had said, Qulu La Ilaha Illallah. He said what? Qulu La Ilaha Illallah. That is what the Prophet said in Makkah. And when Imam Zaman is going to come back, this is what he's going to establish. Because La Ilaha is to fight against zulm and Allah is to establish justice. Now do you understand? Just the sentence of La Ilaha is zulm and adl. Fighting against zulm is La Ilaha. If you don't do La Ilaha, it means you're not fighting against zulm. You're not fighting against zulm. That is the whole idea. La Ilaha means fight against zulm. And illallah means establish justice. My friends, if you only do La Ilaha, there are some extremists also. They only do La Ilaha. They fight against every zulm, every zulm, every zulm. But say, what are you fighting for? Whatever, you know, but this is zulm, we are fighting against it. You know, the anti-war protesters and all these things, you come on, every zone they fight against. But what for? They have no goal. They have no reason. They have no purpose. They are a rebel without a cause. Allah says, I want you to rebel against zalimeen, but for a cause. When you rebel against the zalimeen, the cause you should always be in your mind, and that is to establish Allah. That is to establish Allah. So you fight against zulm for what? To establish adl, to establish the rule of Allah. This is what you want to fight for. And he gave that sign. This is the reason why you see the whole jihad, the movement of Rasulullah was based on that. The whole movement of Imam Ali was based on that. The whole life of Fatima and Hassan were based on that. And the whole movement of Hussein was based on this. Understand this, my friends. You know, in the time of Rasulullah, everyone knew that La Ilaha meant to destroy their idols, to destroy the things that they admired, to destroy the things that they adored and took as gods. They knew that. And Rasulullah fought against that, and a time came when he destroyed those idols. He destroyed those idols. With the help of Imam Ali, he destroyed those idols. And they fell down to the ground. They were broken. But then, idols can be destroyed. But, you know, they always come back in different forms. You know? So, Lot was and Uzza were destroyed in the Kaaba. But then, Shaitan is also smart. And Allah told us that. He said, listen, Yeah. He's going to make more guards and much better guards. Lat and Uzza were easy to destroy. Now you see that he's going to make better guards than that. What is that god that is, can be stronger than Lat and Uzza? You know, and this is, you see, where everything changed. Shaitan came and said, listen, you know, you are making guards. The nafs of insan was saying, you know, I'm making guards. When those people who used to worship Lat and Uzza, what did they used to think? Really, the idols that were made. And even now you go there and see the idols in India and these places that they worship idols. What do they think? Really, I am making an idol and I'm worshipping it. So ultimately, when you worship an idol that you made, sometimes this realization will come, hey, wait a minute, I made my god. Doesn't that make me a god? I made the god, right? With my own hand. I'm making the god. My friends, who made the sun a god? The sun didn't say, I'm god. We made him god. Who made the moon a god? Moon never claimed to be a god. We made him god. After making all these false gods, then man came to the realization that, you know what? No, I am God. Because I made all these gods. That's why Allah says in the Quran that have you seen him who has taken his desires to be his god? Why? Because ultimately man realized that I am God. You know, it's useless to make other gods. Why should I do that? I'm the one making them God. So I will be God. And hence, Lat and Uzza were destroyed. But they were recreated in the personalities of those who claim to be God and who claim to be dominant over others like Yazid. Yazid became now the expression of that power. Yazid became the expression of that power. Now he said, I am the one. He's rejecting the wahi and saying, there is no wahi, there's nothing such. And what if there's no wahi and revelation, then what? You have me. You have me. Don't you see? I can kill the grandson of the Prophet. I can kill the Imam. I can do anything I want. He became that, right? So my friends, when he became the manifestation of dhulm, so obviously, now if Imam Hussein wants to act on Islam, then he must establish La ilaha illallah. So what happened? Imam Hussein established La ilaha when he rejected the bayat of Yazid. When he rejected the bayat of Yazid and the allegiance of Yazid, he said La ilaha. But illallah was not established yet. That's why you see that when it came down to Karbala, then the purpose of this rebellion and the purpose of this standing was established when Imam Hussein sacrificed everything and went into his last sajda. There he established illallah. So let everyone know that I'm saying la ilaha so that I can establish illallah. My friends, this is, my friends, the way. If we do not understand that, then you say that, no, we just want Imam Hussein and we will cry for Imam Hussein and we will mourn for Imam Hussein. For what? What did he teach you? What did he show to you in his life? To fight against whom? Zulm. My brothers, understand, inshallah, there are 10 things in this fitna, in this times of fitna, that we must look after. 10 things we must look after to safeguard our faith and to be true in our iman. And those 10 things will come tomorrow. Lights are closed. And they'll come tomorrow, those 10 things. But right now, the only thing that we need to understand is that when La ilaha was said, then this is the first step, my friends, to fight against zulm. It means to fight against, if you want to be with the Imam, then we need to fight against zulm. We cannot accept it. If someone accepts a zalim, how can he be with the Imam? What relationship does he have with the Imam? What right does he have to call upon Imam Hussain? My friends, it's easy to curse dead people. It's very easy. And people take Ziyarat Ashura and they say, you know, Lanatullah Yazid, Lanatullah Ala Marwan, you know, Ale Marwan and Ale Ziyad and Ale, yes, they're dead people. But the Ziyarat Ashura was emphasized for what? To see who is the Ale Marwan of your time. Who is the Yazid of your time? Really, these people who say Lanat on Yazid and Marwan, if Marwan and Yazid were alive with their empire, how many of them will say it? How many of them will say it? Right now they're dead people. It's easy to curse dead people. They can't curse back. They can't do anything. They're dead people. It's finished. My friends, cowards do that. Cowards do that. Imams did not make us cowards. They taught us how to be brave. When they said that you curse Yazid, it means that Yazid should be alive and curse him. And if he's not alive, then see who is the Yazidi in your time. Who is the Marwan of your time? Who is the Muawiyah of your time? Who is the Zalim of your time? Who is the one who's claiming to be a superpower in your time? Yazid claimed to be a superpower. None who's claiming to be a superpower. See who's doing that and then tell him, La ilaha illallah. Then say that to him. That will make you a Husayni. Cursing a dead Yazid is not going to make you a Husayni. Right? That's not going to make you a soldier of Imam Hussain. This, my friends, is what we need to understand. This is what we need to know. Because when La ilaha illallah was said, you know, this is not easy. A heavy price for it. There's a big price you have to pay for it. A really big price you have to pay for it. You know, and that's the reason, you know, when Imam Hussain, my friends, said this, when he said, Hal min nasirin yansurana, he didn't say it because, you know, he needed you. He didn't say it because he needs you, or he needs us. You know. It's not because of need. There's sometimes, you know, we ask, you know, for example, you know, we make announcements here, we need volunteers for the masjid. But not with this intention that we need you to do this. If you don't do it, you know, we will take care of it. Even if you don't come, we'll say, don't worry. Don't think you're doing an ihsan. When Imam Hussain announced Hal min Nasirin, it means that he announced it, letting people know, listen, if you don't come forward, I have enough people to sacrifice. I have enough blood to give. I have enough blood to give and I have enough people to sacrifice. Don't think that I need you. Understand this, my friends. This was the call of Imam Hussain. It is not because he needs us, it's because he's giving us the chance to be with him. He is giving us the opportunity to gain that sa'adat and that happiness of shahadat. He's giving us that chance. He doesn't need us. Because if you don't come, Imam Hussain is saying, if you don't come, Ali Akbar is there for me. Ali Akbar is, I will sacrifice him. I will sacrifice Ali Akbar. I will sacrifice Qasim. I will sacrifice Abbas. I will sacrifice Onu Muhammad. I have enough people who will sacrifice their life for Islam. If you don't come, this will happen. My friends, Imam Hussain knew the price he had to pay. He said La ilaha illallah and the price is going to be there. The people who invited him, they did not defend him. And so Imam Hussain was left alone. Imam Hussain was left alone. And so lonely was Imam Hussain. So lonely was Imam Hussain. That you know, when Imam Hussain fell from his horse, when he fell down from his horse, He did not fall on the ground. He fell on the arrows that were embedded inside of him. He fell on the arrows that were embedded inside of him. And then when he fell down, he made a mound of sand so he can make his last sajda to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. His farewell to Allah from this dunya so that he can be with him in that abode of forever. Imam Hussain made that mound and he put his sajda and he put his head in that mound to make his final prostration before Allah. That lover who meets his beloved, Imam Hussain, now was in the court of Allah and he was in the meeting with Allah. And at that, it was at this point that you see that Shimr came forward with that sword. He came forward with a sword. And you know what? Shimr, when he was walking towards him, usually you want to go fast in order to kill your prey, so that he may run away or get himself ready to do something or prepare himself to harm you. You want to take time to go there, lest somebody else comes and does something to you. Or, for example, they come and defend him. You want to go fast. But Shimr was walking slowly. Shimr was walking slowly, and as he was walking, he was taking his sword and hitting it on the ground as he walked. He was hitting it on the ground as he walked, and the people asked him, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" You know, because what happens is that when you want to go and kill someone, even if you want to slaughter an animal, then you will always make sure, Islam has recommended also, that the knife you use to kill an animal should be sharp. It shouldn't be dull, so that when it's sharp, it goes fast through the veins of the animal and kills him quickly without any pain, without any hardship for the animal. But you see, here is Shimr. He's hitting his sword on the ground and walking towards Imam Hussain. When he was walking towards Imam Hussain, hitting his sword on the ground, they asked him, "Shimr, why are you hitting the sword on the ground?" So Shimr said, "Don't you see, Imam, this Hussain has no helpers. There is no one who's going to come to his aid, and I want to show it to everyone how helpless Hussain is. I am hitting this sword on the ground so I can make it dull, so I can take my time in slaughtering Hussain. In killing Hussain, I can take my time." This was how lonely Imam Hussain was in Karbala. How lonely Imam Hussain was in Karbala. No one was there to come there to help him. Oh, one child came forward. You know, there's one child who did come there. And he ran towards Imam Hussain when these thieves were around him. He ran towards Imam Hussain and he got on top of his uncle. And he told the people, "Get away from my uncle. I will defend my uncle." And someone came and they hit that child and they started to hit Imam Hussain. He brought that little child. He was not more than 5-6 years old. He brought his hand in the way and his hand was chopped. It was chopped in such a way that it was hanging by his skin. He looked at his hand and screamed. Imam Hussain brought him into his bosom and he said, "My son, do not worry. Allah will have a reward for you." That child got up and went away. They say that this was the son of Abbas who came to defend Hussain and couldn't see him so lonely and being attacked by animals. But you see, when this happened, my friends, Imam Hussain was that lonely on the day of Karbala. If today we see millions of people who come there for the Arba'een of Hussain, then this is that dua of Zainab, and Zainab who made it possible for everyone. You know, this was Zainab, that when Hussain was so alone and everyone, and Shimr came and he slaughtered it, he showed to everyone how helpless Hussain is, how lonely Hussain is, that Hussain has lost. Now Zainab was the one who was going to show that Hussain was the one who won. He is not the loser. He is the victor in Karbala. He is the victor in Sham. When they went to Sham and all the way to Sham, you see how Zainab brought out the message of Hussain in that hardship that he went through, with her own feet burning in the sand and her hands
hands having the signs of ropes around them and no hijab on her head. Zainab is walking and being disgraced and humiliated. People are throwing rocks at her. People are ridiculing her. But Zainab doesn't stop. She starts to talk to people and give the message of Hussein to people. And that message was given. Those who want to hear it can hear it. Those who want to ignore it can ignore it. But Zainab did not stop speaking. She went forward and giving the message. By salam be to Zainab, who brought that message of Hussein all the way from Karbala, all the way to Sham. She brought that message and gave that message to the people. And this Zainab was such that when the time came, when Yazid released the prisoners and he wanted them to go, he called Imam Sajjad. Imam Sajjad went to him and said, Yazid told him that I want to release you all. You all are free to go. Imam Sajjad did not accept that. He said, wait, I must first ask my aunt Zainab. I've never done anything on this trip, on this journey, except with her advice. Zainab is that person that Imamah takes advice from. Zainab, when he went to Zainab and said, Zainab, my aunt Zainab, they have released us. What do you want to do? Do you want to go? Do you want to stay? It is up to you, my son. You see, understand, Zainab at that time, their children and the ladies have gone through a lot. They have nothing on their head. They have nothing in their stomachs. They're hungry and they're thirsty. Never had a decent meal in 1 year. They went through that hardship. She could have asked for water. She could have asked for food. But you know, Zainab's goal in life now was to give the message of Hussein. And she said, my son, for 1 year, we could not mourn Hussein. We could not cry for our martyrs. Arrange a house so that I may cry for the martyrs. My second condition is that those things that were stolen from us be given back to us. And my third condition is that the heads of the shuhada should be given back to us. When Imam Sajjad went back with those three conditions, and my friends, understand this. This is Yazid. You see, understand, Yazid did not release the Ahlul Bayt from prison. Yazid did not release the Ahlul Bayt from the prison. It was Ahlul Bayt who won their freedom from the prison. They are the ones who won their freedom. And you know, the proof of that is Zainab is making the conditions and Yazid is accepting them. Zainab is making the conditions and Yazid is accepting them is a sign that Zainab is the victor, Yazid is the loser. In 1 year, they are in prison, but in prison, they won the jihad for Allah, and they have shown that Haq is going to win. And when Zainab gave those conditions and he accepted them, he said, whatever condition, I will accept it. Go from here, be released. When they had the house, now the ladies, they came in that house, and they established the majlis of Hussein. They started crying and they started mourning for Hussein. Everyone was mourning and they were crying. For the first time they were allowed to cry. For the first time they were in a place where they could openly cry. So they all started crying and they all started mourning for Hussein and raising their voices. When that happened, now the time came, my friends. Imagine that majlis that was there where Zainab and Umm Kulsum, Umm Rabab and Umm Layla, all of them are. All of them are mourning for Hussein. Imagine when the heads of the shuhada came. How did they feel? Everyone jumped at those heads. Umm Rabah picked up the head of Ali Asghar. Al-Layla picked up the head of Akbar. Umm Farwah picked up the head of Qasim. They cried over their heads. But one head came in such a way that when it came inside, then all the ladies left their martyrs and they came to that head and said, Assalamu alayka ya Abu Abdullah. Assalamu alayka ya Hussein. Ash-Shahid bi Karbala. And they cried around the head of Imam Hussein. And the heads were brought out there. And you know what? The guard who brought the heads saw that all the heads were claimed except for two. Zainab was holding the head of Hussein. Two heads were not claimed. And he said, who do these two heads belong to? Are they orphans? Are they yateem? When Zainab looked at the heads of all the Muhammad, she came to them and said, do not call them yateem. My other mother is alive. Give my sons to me. who have been sacrificed for Allah's sake.